Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another episode of The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is an interesting guy with an even more interesting background. He has just published a new novel, The Grace Bay Agreement, a curious look at how the drug cartels might attempt to launder their ill-gotten gains. It is my great pleasure to welcome David Alan Johnson to the program. Dave, hello.
Hello, good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, this has absolutely nothing at all to do with the book, but I do want to ask you to pass on my congratulations to your daughter. I understand that she has just earned an MA.
That's exactly right. Yeah, she's got her master's degree in library science, and she's going to work for another university, Texas Women's University, in their library.
Wow. Is she planning on following in your footsteps and becoming a writer?
I don't think so. No, she's she loves the library world, and she's sort of on the other end of where the writers are. She enjoys going to conferences and meeting writers and seeing what she's going to buy for the library system. But no, I don't think she's going to be a writer.
I have to say this to our listeners. I do a lot of interviews, and I tell my guests to call in at 10 minutes before we're going to go on air. The only ones that do it consistently are pilots. Musicians miss it by days or even weeks, but pilots seem to be really keyed in on the time. Am I right about that, Dave?
Well, yes, especially pilots in my old business. You know, we had the time on target, and you had to be there. You could not be more than 30 seconds early and more than 2 minutes late. And so we learned that early.
Actually, for the sake of new listeners, people that haven't read your other books, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. After high school, instead of going to college, I enlisted in the U.S. Army and became a paratrooper. I was in light weapons infantry and enjoyed my 4 years. And after I got out, I went to school, used my GI Bill, became an aircraft mechanic, learned how to fly. And I got involved because of my background as a soldier with a group that did air support for a guy named Ollie North. Maybe some people remember him. And I was in Nicaragua and Honduras and Salvador, did several different wars around Latin America. And then when Mr. Clinton was elected, since I'd worked for the Republicans, I was no longer an acceptable employee. Went to work on the corporate side. I worked for Chevron and Exxon and Occidental as a contractor in their intelligence department. Until about 2003, went back to work in Latin America, and been working for the U.S. government up until January when I was in Afghanistan. Did two tours in Africa, and written some books about those experiences.
Okay, I think that's a great segue into my next question. All right. You've just published the Grace Bay Agreement, which is a riveting read. What is the basic synopsis? And I'm not looking for you to give us any spoilers. I think the reader needs to discover the story for themselves.
Okay. Well, it starts off with the cartels are losing too much money to the U.S. government. It's being seized in bank by forensic accountants, they call it. They're losing all this money, so they decide that they're going to try and launder their money in a different way. Instead of buying banks, they're going to buy a country. And they target the Turks and Caicos, which is a couple of small islands out in the Caribbean, as a country to buy. And therefore, they could issue their own passports. They could hide their money more effectively. They could move their people in and out as government employees, as it were. And so they send two cartels decide to split the cost, and they send a delegation over to negotiate with the government on being bought. But this is picked up by a mole in their organization, and another group is recruited to go over and stop this from happening. And they're undercover working for the cartels, but the cartels don't know it. And that's my hero is one of the guys that gets recruited. He's a pilot for the organization, and he is there to keep track of the main guy and help him out. But the operation goes badly when the cartel finds out that they've got a mole in their midst. They try to eliminate that mole and miss, instead killing the girlfriend of the hero. And then the hero decides that he's going after the cartels on his own. And I won't spoil it from there, but it's a story of justice versus revenge and mercy versus justice.
Well, one of the things that I picked up from reading the story was once again, and you know, we see this in the news, I won't say every day, but on a fairly regular basis, you know, U.S. organizations, government organizations, don't share information. Yeah, they keep it to themselves, and I think that's one of the problems. You know, that you find in the Grace Bay Agreement.
Yeah, you find this throughout the intelligence community, because it's well documented in a book written in the 80s called The CIA and the Cult of Intelligence. And it documents that people like to keep knowledge for their own personal power. Instead of getting the knowledge to where it could help someone, they want to keep that and grow the power of their own position or their own organization. It's a terrible deal. I first ran into it when I was overhead a patrol in Central America. They're about to get ambushed, and we were not allowed to call them on the ground and save their lives. We were 2,500 feet above them, and we watched them get ambushed because it would have revealed, they think, how we were getting our information. And I said right then that this is a, and I started researching this concept of holding our information for use within the organization instead of for the guys on the ground. And it's used for bureaucrats to get promoted. because they can, something bad will happen and this bureaucrat will go in and say, see, I wrote this report about this so many months ago, predicting this. But he's never, he's promoted because he saw it coming, but he's not punished because if he didn't get the information to the guy that needed it.
Right. It pulls me. You know, we heard this with 911 and most recently the Boston
exactly
deal. Why do people operate this way? You know, why is there this need to knowledge is power and keep it within your own organization?
Well, it's like any other human failing. You know, what people have here is greed. You know, this information is power. It's actually money for them. It helps them grow their organization, and by growing their organization, they get promoted. And so it's what this has brought rise to is different agencies develop their own intelligence, like the Army, they have their own intelligence. The Navy has the Office of Naval Intelligence, to get stuff to their own people. But it's a human failing, and so those organizations then grow up their own bureaucracy, which does the same thing. It's just like any business where the owner has got to fight against people becoming lazy.
Right. Now, I read the book, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, thank you.
It's a very creative work from a very creative mind. Is it possible that a drug cartel might try and do such a thing? You know, get such power over a small country that...
Well, let's put it this way. Most of my operations, I'm required to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Right.
And so this operation, I was not. I never signed a non-disclosure agreement. And I was on this operation. And I was spending several weeks at a time in the Turks and Caicos doing this, this thing. And I was staying in an $850 a night hotel. Life was good. So, it was, I was the interface between one group and the other. Got to go visit the head of the Mexican cartel in Mexico City to take him messages. Back to Jamaica to do some other stuff. There's still a good guy out there, so I won't go into that. And I did some other work for them. And the whole job lasted about 5 months.
Okay. Now, am I hearing this right? The Grace Bay Agreement, while it is certainly a novel, of fiction, it is based on actual events.
Oh yes. Oh yes. And the threat came and was caught, but I wrote the book as if the threat had gone through and bad things had happened to the guys that were in the operation and how they would have responded. I hate to be so obtuse there. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I know all about non-disclosure agreements and, even doing something outside of a situation where there is no non-disclosure agreement. But it just boggles my mind. You know, the drug cartels have so much money that they could, in fact, try and do this?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but Pablo Escobar, back in the early 90s, offered to pay off the national debt of Colombia if they'd let him out of prison. He had so much money that when a new version of the 747 came out, they took one to Medellin because he was going to buy one and fix it up as a VIP airplane. Yeah, they've got that kind of money.
Wow. Now, it's becoming, on one hand, increasingly difficult, and yet the drug cartels find new and inventive ways to get drugs to their destination. And obviously one of the destinations is the U.S.
Right.
Small planes, fast boats, both of those seem to work sometimes. But, you know, with improvements in technology, very much that avenue isn't as safe and easy as it was. I hear now they're even using submarines.
Oh, yes. I have chased and caught submarines.
You know, is there really a solution here?
You know, the solution goes back to humanity. You know, there are certain cultures that don't have very much problem with drugs. You know, that even though they're available, they don't have the user problems that we have. You know, because their people are more responsible, or they're more grown up. I don't know how else to say it. And that's the key, you know. As long as there is a giant sucking sound from the United States sucking in drugs from all over the world, you know, it's going to be impossible to stop it. You know, but the hope is that you can slow it down long enough that we can educate our kids. It's got to come from that generation drugs are hurtful, that drugs are not the answer to your problems. It's, you know, if you want to feel good, it's better to do other things than to use substances that alter your brain. You know, and that's where the key is. The war on drugs should be seen and should be treated as a holding action until we can get our kids educated, and we're doing a very poor job of that.
I think it's fair to say that you are very well traveled, and I'll even go so far as to say you've worked for most of the three-letter corporations out of the U.S. government.
Well, actually, no, just a couple of them.
Just a couple?
Just a couple, yeah.
I'm never quite sure, you know, where and when you're going to pop up. Have you retired from action?
Well, I think so. You know, I was in Afghanistan the last time, and that pretty much deterred me from going anymore. The you know, our effort over there is not was not an action that I could believe in. Usually, most of the little wars I've worked in, I was a believer, and I was not a believer in that one. And a lot of things about that I can't talk about, but it was it seemed like that operation was more to subsidize Boeing and Sikorsky and, you know, those guys than it was to actually do anything good for the people.
Right. Yeah. I look at Iraq and Afghanistan. The Russians tried Afghanistan once. They realized this is pointless. It's best just to let these people do whatever they want to do, and then we wandered in. Between you and I, well, and the people listening, should we just pull out of Afghanistan?
Well, you know, it's a real hard thing once you're in somewhere and come out, you know, to make that decision. You know, I'm no strategic guy at all. You know, my opinion is, yeah, we never should have gone in there. But the withdrawal has got to be done. Got to be done well. It's got to be done right, both for the people that have helped us. You know, our withdrawal from Vietnam, for instance, had many, many people that had been loyal to us for years. We left them in the cold, and they ended up going to jail or worse. And so, you know, your withdrawal needs to be done in an orderly manner and such. But I don't see how we can continue our course there. But, you know, like I said, that's way above my level. I'm spouting off about a lot of stuff I don't know anything about, but it's a mess over there.
All right. Let's change subjects and go to an absolute shameless commercialization.
Okay.
Right. Do you have a website for your books?
I do. It's dallenjohnson.com. And I write under the name D. Allen Johnson because there's two other David Allen Johnson authors. I thought there was just one other one, but there's two other ones. So I write under D. Allen Johnson. And that... My books are available on Kindle, and a couple are in print editions on Amazon also.
Is the Grace Bay Agreement in print yet?
It is not. It is only available on Kindle. And I've got a promotion, I think, that's just ending on that. I think it ends tonight at midnight. I'll have to check on that. I should have done that before we started. But it was being promoted, free download, I think, today only, and then it goes back to $3.99.
That's not a bad price, and I don't want to sound like one of those infomercial people, but $3.99 to read the Grace Bay Agreement, you can't go wrong.
Well, I think so. It's you just don't get much action above that. Competition's pretty stiff.
Indeed. Let's talk about what you're doing right now. I spent some time watching a truly interesting reality TV program on the subject of aircraft repo.
Ah, yeah.
Right. It looks it looks like it's much more complex from hooking up a car to a tow truck and arguing with the owner.
Right.
Now, I don't think you're in the aircraft repo business, but
I've just done one.
tell me.
Well, there was an airplane down in Mexico that a guy sold to a drug dealer, and the drug dealer didn't make his payments. The bank called me and asked me to go into Mexico and get it. And it was Guadalajara, and we went in there and got a battery because the battery was dead. You know, we did a little ramp recon, found out the condition of the airplane, got the parts we needed. That's mostly just the battery and some hydraulic fluid. Serviced it, and then about 2 o'clock in the morning, we fired it up, taxied it out without any lights on it, out to a taxiway. We didn't go on the runway. Turned on our lights and took off, and came to the United States. And everything ended well on that one.
Excuse me. But right now you're in the buying and selling aircraft business?
Right? I am. That's a part of it. But the main thing I do is I teach the precepts of government intelligence to businesses so that they can make more profit. But one of the vehicles we use is an airplane. And there's several reasons for that. Warren Buffett says that the main reason to buy a business airplane is to get another CEO in the cabin for an hour and a half with no cell phone, no interruptions. He can't leave. So you can make your sales pitch to him. For CEO to CEO sales, for the big sales happen, you know, $50 million contracts and such. A lot of them happen in the cabin of a corporate airplane. And, I help these companies target the decision maker they need for the big contract and how they're going to get to that guy, learn about him. And, you know, when it comes time to, say you find out that this guy really likes football, you know, and you invite him to a football game, you can't say, I'll send you tickets on United Airlines to go. No, he won't come unless you say, I'll come pick you up in my company airplane. The other thing is that for a lot of these companies, big companies, they look at a smaller company and they judge them as to whether they're going to be able to survive as a supplier. And that's one of the ways they judge them is, do they have a corporate airplane? Because if you have a corporate airplane, you're looked at as being more forward-thinking, more growth-oriented, because all these big companies understand how valuable a corporate airplane is. It's sort of like advertising. It's hard to quantify, but you know it works. So those are things that I try to teach companies. But, yes, the money that's made is when I sell them the airplane.
I won't ask for any secrets here. Grace Bay Agreement definitely has some heroes and some not so heroic folks.
Right.
Did you write yourself into the book?
That is something that we can't talk about.
How did I guess that would be your answer? Okay, so I'll just move on.
Okay.
What is next in the literary world?
Well, I have over the last couple of years, I've run into some inventors in the Central Texas area that are inventing some very amazing things that are going to come up. And I was talking to one whose goal is to become like Bill Gates, except instead of just having a bunch of money, he wants to use that money to vault himself into political office. And his invention could be the next Microsoft. And so I'm writing a story about what would happen if one of these guys, you know, somebody along the, you know, with the stature of a Michael Dell or Steve Jobs, set his sights on using his vast fortune to become a political figure. And this particular inventor is very religious, and how the religion and politics would intermesh along with the economics of his fortune. And you know, I'm hoping to do a series of, you know, the rise and fall of an economic dictator.
Boy, that does sound interesting. And I'll just bet airplanes, you know, are involved.
Somewhat, yes.
But before we wrap this up, you've been a pilot for I don't know how many years. How many aircraft are you permitted?
Well, you know, it's called a type rating, and it's aircraft that you're licensed to be a captain in.
Right.
That work, yeah, because, you know, smaller aircraft, anything under 12,500 pounds, you can pretty much fly, you know, any pilot can fly those without a special training. But the type rating, you got to go and get a special license for each one. So counting the Soviet airplanes, I'm rated in 7 of them.
A Soviet airplane?
Yeah. I got to go after the wall fell. I got to go to Eastern Europe document the aircraft capability and overhaul capability of the Soviet bases that were left emptied in Eastern Germany and Hungary, Austria, Poland. Where else did I go? It was a great trip. Huh. Czech Republic was my favorite. But so I got rated in a Soviet airplane over there.
Does that include jets, or are you a prop kind of guy?
Well, I am rated in a jet, but, you know, the money was always in prop airplanes for me.
Dave, you are one of the most interesting people I know.
Well, you know, there's a story about you remember those two British prime ministers that swapped back and forth, Disraeli and Gladstone?
Right.
Well, you know, the first female reporter in the 1890s at the Boston Globe, they sent her over there. And after having lunch with each of them, they asked her what she thought. And she said, well, after going to lunch with Disraeli, I was convinced I was the most interesting woman in the world. Excuse me, I messed that up. After going to lunch with Disraeli, he convinced me he was the most interesting man in the world. After going to lunch with Gladstone, he convinced me I was the most interesting woman in the world. So that's my goal, to be able to convince people that they're the most interesting people in the world.
Dave, I have to close the program. I really want to thank you for taking time out today to talk to us.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And I'm sure we'll talk again in the not-too-distant future.
All right. Thanks again.
Okay.
All right.
Until next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy life. And we will be back again soon. Till then, goodbye.